Hey, what's going on, party people? It's your man, the Godfather. Happy Halloween, everyone. I am here waiting on Big Nasty. We were supposed to go trick-or-treating, but you know how it is. CPT does not take a holiday, even on Halloween. So while we're waiting, I guess we can listen to a great interview that Alfred and I conducted a couple weeks ago with Alfredo Torres, a legend in the world of radio, a legend in the world of podcasting, and he stopped by to talk about his beloved Miami Dolphins. He stopped by to chat about The Walking Dead, and of course, we talked some old school wrestling with the American Dream Dusty Rhodes, if you will, you understand. Check it out. I know some of you guys heard the interview that we had on the show a couple episodes ago, but this is the full, unedited interview with Alfredo Torres in its glory, over an hour long. Hope you guys enjoy it. And I'll see what's going on with Big Nasty. All right. Enjoy. And welcome back to the Kings of Sports, the world's most dangerous sports program, powered by Place to Be Nation. Go to placetobenation.com. They are your one-stop spot for all the latest news and information in sports, music, gaming, movies, television, and anything else in the world of pop culture. Placetobenation.com. And we are back for another great interview. I'm not even going to say interview, Alfred. I'm going to say conversation. Okay. With our guest today. Unfortunately, Marcus disappeared between the first segment and now, so I guess he might be either he's outspending his money that he won on his fantasy baseball, or he just doesn't want to talk about zombies today. You never can tell with Marcus, but Alfred and I are here, and we are joined at this time by a very special guest. If you've been in the Hampton Roads area for, you know, any length of time over the past 10 years, you've definitely heard this man on the radio, on a variety of platforms and programs, most notably the Mike and Bob Show with our good buddy Bobby Fresh. He also was on the Bob's Boneyard podcast and currently is the host of Torres versus Zombies with John McTell. And it's great to have him here, not only to talk some sports, not only to talk maybe some wrestling, but the Walking Dead season premiere is coming up on Sunday, so we definitely wanted to get him in here and get his thoughts on the issue. Ladies and gentlemen, he is a legend in the broadcast industry, a renaissance man, if you will, the Silver Fox, Alfredo Torres. What's good, brother Torres?
Was that a zombie attack? No, that wasn't a zombie attack. That was the fact, and that was just, you called me a legend, and yet you got the one thing that I've never gotten, a sponsor. I mean, who's the legend here, brother? How are you gentlemen doing today?
Oh, we doing awesome. Good, man.
Okay, so what do you want to talk about first?
Well, let's start off. You know, I know, you know, Halloween is kind of your time and your season.
Yes.
But before we get to that, I want to talk about something that may be equally scary to you, and that is your beloved Miami Dolphins that started off.
Start off. Oh my God! Let me tell you about the Dolphins. I feel like I'm in an abused relationship, and I'll tell you why. Because you know what? They come out 3-0, and for years I've been saying that the Dolphins should have been playing hockey because they don't know anything about a fourth quarter. And then all of a sudden you get these first three games, they come out. Man, fourth quarter team all of a sudden. It's like they learned. I'm like, oh, God, the Dolphins. Then they get the butt spanked by the Saints. It's at home. It's a Monday night game. All right, I'll give them that one. And then last week, oof. Doof. It's a setup.
Yeah, and you got the Bills, the Patriots, and Cincinnati coming up next on the schedule. So, I mean, you got to buy next week, but I mean, I will say though, I have been impressed with Tannehill. Like, if that's one thing you can hang your head on, you got a good young quarterback.
We got a good young quarterback, and if he makes it through the end of the season, he's going to become a great one. I mean, but you know, the problem when we had Marino after those first couple of years was that we were always missing a piece. You know, we had a front line. We didn't have a receiver. We had a receiver. We didn't have a running back. We had a running back. We didn't have a kicker. Whatever it was. But we were always missing something. Here, those first three games, it looked like we were running on all cylinders, finally. And then last week, we could have won that game. He gets sacked three times in the last, you know, in five plays? I mean, come on.
Through one and a quarter seasons, do you think that the Dolphins may have their quarterback of the future? It's not going to be another Dan Marino, but maybe at least another elite Hall of Fame caliber quarterback in Tannehill?
If he makes it, you know what? Ask me that at the end of the season. If he's not sitting on the sidelines on crutches. Because, again, he's going to need a front line. If he's going to develop anything, and I think he's in a good position to, you know, if he gets a front line to protect him, he seems to have started to develop an eye for the, you know, the ability to read the field. He looks like he's doing some good play calling, but, you know, he's still learning, but he's not going to learn a lot if he's laying on his back the whole time.
And the funny thing to me with the AFC East is you kind of got this weird thing where, you know, you got the Patriots with Brady, and I think Brady's probably got three or four good years left in him before he retires and heads off to France with his supermodel wife and wears Uggs all the time. yeah. But you got the Bills with E.J. Manuel, who's shown some flashes. You got the Jets with Geno Smith, who, you know, turnovers aside, he looks like he might be a player. And then you got your Dolphins with Tannehill. I think the AFC East, you know, maybe three or four years down the road, it's wide open.
I think it's wide open next year. I think Brady, three to four good years for any. When you talk about Brady, is what he's going to have is not three or four good Brady years. You know what I'm saying? He's not going to be anything like what he was. And at that point, you've taken the fear of Brady out of everybody. You know, and he's getting there now. People are not scared of Brady anymore. You know, they're not. They're not scared of the Patriots anymore. If the Dolphins can get their act together, I think they could be the next AFC East team, you know, because Geno Smith, well, first of all, it's his first year. And we can say it's his first year because Sanchez ain't coming back. So Geno Smith's going to take this year to develop. Okay, the Bills are the Bills, and they always look. You know what? You lose four Super Bowls in a row, and it takes you decades to recover. You know, I mean, look at the Vikings; they lost four in the '70s, and they still haven't shook that. So I don't see the Bills doing anything. You know, they're the Cleveland Browns or the Detroit Lions of the AFC East. They never will get that respect that they had, at least not while I'm alive, and I don't plan on dying soon. So
I was gonna say, so how long you got, man?
Oh no, I got plenty of time, baby. I got plenty of time.
Well, let's talk about now. You said you think the AFC East is a year away from being wide open. I think it's wide open right now until the Bills, who you compare to the Browns, lost E.J. Manuel. They look like a legitimate team. So let's look at a head-to-head matchup with the Dolphins and the Patriots. What do you think the season series would be? 2-0 Dolphins, 2-0 Patriots, 1-1. What do you think is going to happen?
The Patriots are going to make it because they'll win. And it pains me to say that. It pains me like a hemorrhoid to say that. Because they're going to win because of the fact that they are a veteran team. And the Dolphins can't seem to pull it together, and they need to. That line, if that line does not shape up, it's gonna be a long season for Tannehill, or it might be a short season, depending on how hard he gets hit and by who, you know. So in the head-to-head matchup, I'm gonna go with the Patriots, but it'll be a close game, assuming that front line holds on. And I think that's going to be the point. I don't think the Dolphins need to win against the Patriots. Because, again, forget about this year. I don't think the Dolphins need to win against the Patriots. I just think they need to play in tough. If they take it into the fourth quarter, tie score, down a touchdown, down a field goal, and that's what the Patriots end up winning by, you know what? That's all they need. Because they know they can beat them at that point. And then you go through offseason and you show up whatever holes you have, which hopefully won't be many, and next year they're coming back.
Now, speaking of coming back, We're going to talk zombies in a minute, but I know you're a big wrestling fan, especially...
Dude, oh my God, first of all, before you can go with the wrestling, can I tell you, I popped like a 10-year-old boy when the Big Show laid out Triple H this past Sunday.
Mark.
For weeks, I've been yelling at my team. They got me again. They got me again with this.
They stuck you back in.
Oh, dude, and you know what? It's wrestling goes in cycles. And with me, you know, I've been watching wrestling since 70. I was 3 years old. I get in and I get out. And they caught me, but I'm always checking on it. And they caught me with this, what's good for business. And Triple H has been, you know, the way he disrespected Dusty and Goldust and the whole thing with the Rhodes family and the way he's been and to see the Big Show agonizing over, you know, and to put out his dirty laundry, and then for Stephanie McMahon to say, you're fired, I would have slapped that bitch with my big hand. Where I could hold you could fit a wine bottle in it, and it'll look like a shot glass. I would have slapped her fucking head off like a grizzly slapping a fucking horse. I'm sorry for cursing. I'm sorry, but I would have slapped the shit out of that bitch. But the Big Show, being a gentleman, leaves, and what happens? He comes back at the end, dismisses the Shield like they're not even there. And when he looked at Triple H, you know what? I'll say it. I had a hard on. I'll say it. And when he punched him, all in my pants. I popped. I was like, oh my God. My roommate comes out. He thinks I'm having a heart attack. And then, oh my God.
You're just coming.
Yeah, that was awesome. I know something. You mentioned Dusty Rhodes. I know you popped for the American Dream, if you will. I know you've been a big fan of him for years and more years.
For years, you understand that the American Dream has given me hope. You understand, seeing how he came up from the son of a plumber. Out in Texas way, he comes up and he makes himself world champion, you understand. So, yes, I popped for American Dream.
I thought that was the best moment of the pay-per-views, to have the Rhodes family win. They got their jaws back. It was a feel-good moment. But Triple H and Stephanie were off the show after promoting this angle, after being on TV. Do you think that took away from the show, or even that angle for Triple H and Stephanie be nowhere to be found?
No, absolutely not. Because, you know, here's the thing. They've shown themselves to interfere in matches. They've shown it. So you know if they're there, they're going to, let's call it what it is, okay? Let's break kayfabe, since it doesn't exist anymore. The angle is, the storyline is, everybody in the back is scared of them, right? So now, if they're not there, there's nothing to be scared of. No one's scared of Brad Maddox, you know? So to have Stephanie and Triple H not there allows some of the things to happen. Big Show doesn't punch Randy Orton if Triple H is there.
But a lot of people are upset with that ending, is for Big Show to come in and schmoz the whole thing. A lot of people are upset because, like you said, Vince or Stephanie and Triple H weren't there, so it allowed everything to run amok, and the pay-per-view ended with no champion.
But here's the thing that you got to realize. Pay-per-views right now are just extended Monday Night Raws. You know, you build it up for this great thing, but it's just an extension of the story. You know, wrestling, and Nate's heard me talk about wrestling, because I'm an old school guy, you know, and we didn't have pay-per-views back in the day. So we had when wrestling was territories. I lived in New York. So first Monday every month, WWWF, which is what it was called at the time, Worldwide Wrestling Federation, was at Madison Square Garden. First Monday of every month. And that became one of the pinnacle places. Then you had the Boston Gardens. You had other places. Down here with NWA, you had, you know, the Hampton Coliseum was a big one. You know, so you had all these territories. And the TV was just a way to continue the storyline until they got to your town. Well, now WWE owns everything, and all you're doing now is you're continuing these storylines. So you got Monday Night Raw as the main hub, you know, as the main place of focus. Then you got SmackDown, and it builds up to a story which is supposed to climax at pay-per-view of the month. But now you can't do it all. You can't complete all the stories, so there has to be something to carry on. So you complete the road story, right? And that's great, and everybody's happy. But then you got to have something to carry on into Monday night. Otherwise, you got to start all over again.
Yeah, my only problem is I think they have too many pay-per-views now. Like, I think there's, like, three in the last 6 weeks with the WWE. And I remember back in the days when they used to only have, like, eight shows, and you
right.
could really get focused and hyped on that. Now it seems, like you said, they're just kind of extended Raws, which isn't a bad thing, but it's like, if I'm going to pay $60, you know what I'm saying, I want to see something more than an extended Raw.
Well, that's the whole thing, is that you're not going to see that. Look at it this way. It's the extended Raw, but this is where you get the Hell in the Cell matches. This is where you can cut people up and see them bleed. This is where you can cripple people, you know, and you can't see that in Raw. You can't see that in Raw and on SmackDown. So that's what it is. It's, you know, you get the special match, but you got to pay for that special match,
yep.
You know.
Generally, I'm with Nate. I think there are too many pay-per-views, because if you have too many pay-per-views, you run into that problem where you are constantly blowing off these pay-per-views by having these crazy little schmaltz finishes. And the idea of a pay-per-view is to add some resolution, a war to settle the score, if you will.
Right.
And if they're not giving us that for $55, then why am I paying my money to watch? Why don't I just watch Raw?
I agree with you 100%. I mean, you know, think about it. Pay-per-views, there was one a year. You know,
yeah.
It was WrestleMania, and that was it, you know, and that became an event. That was the Super Bowl of wrestling. You called your friends over. It's WrestleMania Sunday. Everybody's coming over to the house. Everybody's chipping in a dollar for whoever's got cable, and we're all going to bring something over, and we're all going to eat, and we're going to drink, and we're going to pop like children. But now you got them going on every 3 weeks. I mean, they're saying now, you know, Hell in a Cell's coming up in 3 weeks. You just had one 3 weeks ago. You know, so, I mean, it's, you know, I don't even know. It's just a generation, man. I wouldn't be surprised if it gets to the point where literally every other week you got a pay-per-view.
Oh.
Yeah, that's why they need, I guess, John Cena's coming back earlier than he was supposed to, because they need to get them kids back watching.
They do. They do. And you know what? Don't even talk to me about John Cena. Oh, for the love of God.
that's your boy, isn't it, Alfred? That's your boy.
Yeah, man. Come on,
man.
No. You're a chain gang warrior?
I'm not a chain gang warrior, but I do support John Cena and all that he does. I think he's the hardest working man in wrestling.
Wait. You just said you're not a chain gang warrior, but you support John Cena and everything he does.
Yeah, I don't consider myself
that
like
sounds
a chain.
To me like you're chain. No, you know what? Hey, Alfred, it's all good, man. I mean, I don't know how old you are, but obviously I can hear your voice. I know you're a young kid. You know, so that's fine. That's fine. I mean, hey, I'm not yet.
No, George.
Would you tell your parents you want that for Christmas? I mean, you know, I'm going to call you. Can't I mean, I know you can't see me, and I'm doing the hand thing right now in front of my phone. There ain't no shame, bro.
Okay.
There ain't no shame. I'm a Dusty Rhodes fan. I go around and I talk like Dusty. You know, you go and you sit there and I don't even know what he does. Oh, hustle, loyal, respect. You go, baby. I ain't on you.
Okay, so tell me what you hate about John Cena, though, so much. So maybe we can come to a resolution here. Like pay-per-view, we're going to do it for free.
Here's what I hate about John Cena. I'm 47 years old. That's what I hate about John Cena. If I was 26, I'd be watching Raw in my underwear staring at John Cena. I'm 47. I saw wrestling before Hulk Hogan. Okay, I'm from the, you know, BH, before Hogan era. So guys like Cena, like Randy Orton, I hate Randy Orton. I can't stand him. He's another piece of crap wrestler. Daniel Bryan I like, because Daniel Bryan's got personality. John Cena's got this smugness about him. Okay, and he plays that role, he walks that line of the guy, who breaks the fourth wall, Do you understand what that? Do you understand term?
No, I know what you're talking about. Like he goes outside and talks about how wrestling is real and goes off script.
Right. And you know he's. If you probably don't watch the Marx Brothers because you're probably a young punk, but if you were older and you'd have seen the Marx Brothers, one of the things that Groucho used to do awesome is in the middle of the movie he would turn to the camera and talk to the audience. So he would, so that's breaking the fourth wall where he acknowledges that everything around him is made up.
Right.
Okay. John Cena does that.
I think we even have more in common than you think, because, like, if you put John Cena and CM Punk in a match, I'm rooting for CM Punk. I have an old soul. I love Dusty Rhodes, too. The thing about John Cena, maybe I should say I respect him, because, yes, his act does get old. I don't like when he refuses to sell for people, or he laughs things off, or he gets too jokey, but you've got to admit that John Cena can wrestle, and he is capable of having a great match, not just with people who are ring generals like CM Punk, but I've seen him have great matches with Umaga and Great Khali, and he's just somebody who I admire his work ethic and what he brings to the table. I'm telling you right now.
I admire his work ethic. I admire what he does with the children. You understand? I admire all of that. I don't like him as a wrestler. I don't like that he breaks the fourth wall. I grew up I grew up in an era where Freddie Blassie was stabbed because he never broke that fourth wall. You know, because he was hated. I was in Madison Square Garden where people would spit. I just hawk loogies at bad guys as they walk through. And when Cena, you know, and Cena and the good guys always made that effort to be, you know, to be noble. And to me, if Cena would stop breaking that damn fourth wall and stop reminding us that wrestling is entertainment and that it's not a story, you know, it's not a male soap opera anymore, I think he'd be great. But he keeps breaking it and he keeps letting us know. It's like he's letting us in. You know what? I don't want to go behind the curtain. I don't want to. I want to turn on wrestling, and I want it to be the equivalent of a male general hospital as the world turns. That's what it always was. It was this drama. And don't break that fourth wall. Don't. Let me get lost in wrestling. Like right now, that's what I'm loving about WWE last, I don't know, month and a half. You know, with what they've been doing with Daniel Bryan and with Triple H and, you know, what's good for business. You know, you're letting me get lost in the story, man, and I want that. I really want, and I like the fact that they're keeping CM Punk out of it, out of that whole storyline, because CM Punk also tends to break that fourth wall, you know? So I like that. And, you know, as an old school wrestling guy, that's what I want. I want to hate the bad guy. I don't want to sit there and look at the bad guy and have him give me a wink. You know?
No, it's perfectly understandable. You have to get lost into the story. That's why I think Randy Orton works so well as a bad guy. Even though you don't like him, I think you don't like him for the right reasons. We're in an age where it's like the internet age, where there are these fans who refuse to boo the bad guy. They love Damian Sandow. Mm-hmm. They love Dean Ambrose. They love CM Punk. That's why I think those guys are terrible bad guys. Randy Orton and Triple H right now are good bad guys, and it's a shame because I hate what WWE is doing right now, how they're not going all the way with having Triple H and Randy Orton sell and having Triple H admit that he's been defeated or whatnot. He just kind of laughs everything off. But he's such an easy bad guy to boo because the things that the internet fans hate about Triple H, that's what they're accentuating about Triple H right now. He's a power-hungry, egomaniac who wants all the spotlight to himself and who buries the entire roster. That's what he's doing, but they need him all the way.
Right, and that's why I like Triple H right now. You know, I like that. I like that he's power hungry, you know, and that he's all about himself. And I enjoy that. I, you know, keep this story like, well, now that Big Show's knocked him out, now it's, you know, it's the beginning and the end of the storyline. Because now he's shown weakness, you know, and he's shown that he can get defeated. So,
before we see old man McMahon show up,
You know what? Ooh, November? No, pay per view late November?
I could definitely see him show up because I think that's the next thing where, you know, it's Vince shows up and he's teamed up with his son-in-law, with his daughter, and they're just these three hateable people instead of two. And I think that takes it to the next level.
I'll tell you who I want to see. You're going to laugh. I'm laughing just thinking about it. But I would love to see the Mean Street Posse come running out, beating the crap out of people, and then out comes Shane O'Mac.
Oh, man.
And you know we're not going to see him. He's done with the business, you know, at least being in front of the camera. But you know what? I loved him. I loved the Mean Street Posse, and I loved Shane McMahon.
Yeah, Shane was a great, great character, and he took a lot of – I know people are like, you know, he was just a stunt man, but those stunts paid off. I mean, you remember those Shane McMahon matches.
Oh yeah. He took more than just bumps, man. You know, he took man time, Mick Foley type bumps.
He would do bumps that Mick Foley probably would turn down. And that's one of the things I loved about Shane, is he was able to earn the respect of the boys in the locker room by doing all those crazy bumps and having pretty good matches. He's not a great athlete, but he was able to get in there and hang with some of guys like Kurt Angle and put on a believable match. You know, I love him. I really do miss him.
Yes, but think about it. He's the owner's son. And to be able to, if he was a wrestler on his own, no relation to Vince, he'd have been in there. He'd be in the upper part of the card. His size would keep him from being a champion, you know, but he would be top tier. You know, he would hold an intercontinental belt. He'd hold a European champion if they still had one, you know. And so I think he was a hell of a wrestler, all things considered.
And he's definitely better than David Flair. So.
and for being, you know, for being a son of somebody, you know, I mean, he was better than San Martino's son.
Yeah, and Vern Gagne's son.
Yeah, and Ric Flair's son.
Yeah.
I mean, so, and you know, and these are Hall of Famers. Every Hall of Fame, not just the WWE Hall of Fame, but every Hall of Fame, you know, and their son's son. And here's, you know, Vince McMahon, who essentially was an announcer, you know, his entire career until his dad dies, and then he becomes a businessman. And his son comes out there and holds his own against, you know, top-tier wrestlers. You got to respect that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's you know, like you said, it's one of the best dramas on TV. I still enjoy the WWE. I ain't even gonna front. But let's talk about a drama that's making a comeback on Sunday, Brother Torres.
Oh yes, sir, Brother Nate. Now we're getting into my house.
Huh? We in your wheelhouse, if you will.
If you will, you understand. We're not about talking about The Walking Dead.
Now this is a show that I didn't start watching until last year, and honestly, the only reason I watched was because my ex was a big fan, and she kind of got me into the show. So, you know, as somebody that's kind of maybe a casual fan, has only seen commercials about the show, tell me why I should be interested in tuning in on Sunday to see season four.
The reason you should be watching The Walking Dead is not about the zombies. The reason you should be watching it is what makes all great zombie artifacts, and by artifacts I'm using an academic term, meaning anything that deals with zombies, books, movies, TV shows, they do it right. And that is the conflict between humans. Because you see, when it comes to zombie stuff, it's not the zombies that you have to worry about. It's the humans. The zombies you only need to worry about during the initial outbreak. After that, it's human versus human, and that's the conflict. And The Walking Dead does that conflict incredibly.
And is that why you think the zombie genre per se has become so mainstream? Because it's always had its audience and following. It's always been considered kind of niche. But now Brad Pitt is in zombie movies. Now we have The Walking Dead, which is highly rated. What do you think it is that now America has a zombie fetish?
Zombies are metaphoric. See, after 9/11, you had America trying to come to grips with with pandemics, with terrorists, with all these kind of things, and horror movies in general are a good escape for people. Okay, so you see the zombies start to make a resurgence because zombies are metaphoric. So you go into watch a zombie movie and you can let yourself get terrified, because that's why people go to horror movies, is to allow themselves that ability to scream and to feel fear, to feel horror, knowing that in 2 hours it's all resolved and you can go home to deal with stuff that isn't resolved. Terrorists, war, you know, the anthrax, all the stuff that was going on in the early 2000s. So zombies become metaphoric. And that's why zombies are such a great monster, because you can put zombies in to represent any problem, anything that we fear, anything that we're concerned with. Mm. Because that becomes the issue, is the thing we're concerned with. And then the problem is always there. Okay, the zombies are always there. But what are we going to do? What are we going to do when Hurricane Katrina happened? You know? Take away Hurricane Katrina and add zombies. Okay? So you have the initial hurricane that comes in. You have the initial wave of zombies. And it causes all kinds of havoc, right, for the first week. And then what happens? The hurricane isn't the problem anymore, though there's still residual effects from the hurricane. What becomes the problem? Human on human. People killing each other. People trying to grab each other's women and each other's water and each other's ammo. People shooting people down the street to get what they got. Meanwhile, there's still the effects of the hurricane all over the place. Same thing with zombies. Now, put the zombies in there. Put zombies down in there. You get the initial wave, right? And people looking out for each other. And then what happens? After the zombies, that initial wave, the zombies aren't the issue. The zombies are still around. But then what becomes the issue? People killing each other for a can of beans, for a bottle of water, you know? Thinking that they could, you know, these guys go around and see women and decide they're going to take them. That becomes the issue. And that's the issue. That's what makes The Walking Dead great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've go ahead and say a spoiler alert to anybody that hadn't caught up until last season. I don't want to spoil anything. Like, I don't know if you heard last week's show, but I kind of spoiled something for Marcus on Breaking Bad.
Uh-huh.
So I don't want to spoil anything. So if you haven't seen up to season 3, stop this right now and then come back and listen to it later. Because I do want to talk about some of the characters that I saw last year. And like I said, last year was the first season I kind of got into it, and just there was like the governor, like to me, I think he is like, I know Rick is the centerpiece of the show, but to me the governor was the person that kind of drove the action.
Yeah, well, it drove the action because Rick was still trying to be a nice guy, and then the governor obviously wasn't, and the fact that Rick let himself get manipulated because he had this fantasy of a wonderful place where he could take his family to and his little group. Yeah, of course the governor drew it. Plus, the governor was a psycho. You know? I mean, who else would keep a bunch of fish tanks filled with zombie heads?
Yeah, and the crazy thing to me was after, I guess he's still on the run as of season 4.
Right.
With the black dude and the Mexican dude.
Right.
And so I wonder if, because the way it looked to me is that the governor's going to kind of be on the down low for a little while and then pop up in the middle of the season rather than being a villain from the start. Is that how you see things?
The way I see things, now the way seasons are, we don't have a traditional season anymore. We have too many seasons. So I don't know what they're going to do with him. In this kind of a world, the governor could go away and never be seen again. And it's not unusual. We could just assume that he was, you know, eaten by zombies or, you know, he went someplace and was killed. But in this kind of a world, we could literally go through 3 or 4 years before he comes back. So I don't know. I think it'd be interesting. I got to see what happens. they're not following the comic book, you know? And that's what makes it... That's what makes the show fun, is that you read the comic book, that following the comic book enough for you to have an idea of what might be going down. But you don't really know for sure because they've changed it enough. So who knows? You know, in the book, in the comic book, the governor's dead. So you know?
That's very interesting. I thought he was the character. I think between the governor and Michonne, those were the two characters that really drew me to the show. But I do want to get your thoughts on Crazy Ass Carl, man. this little psycho.
Crazy ass. Let me tell you about Crazy Ass Carl. Crazy Ass Carl went from worst to first. He went from everybody wanted him dead, literally. Everybody wanted him. I on Facebook, I do a Walking Dead thread. We call it the Walking Thread. And you know, we get a few people on, and we're talking about the show as it's going on. And we have people literally, when's he going to die? When's he going to, why is he still alive? Feed him to a zombie. Shoot him in the head. This is what people were saying. We come back after that season, from season 2 to season 3, and all of a sudden, goddamn Carl grew cold. There's no, look in his eyes, there is no soul in there anymore, man. When he shot that boy at the end of last season.
Yeah.
That was cold. There's no other way to say it. That shit was cold-blooded. You know, we were just like the internet went silent. People yelling and screaming on the internet. All of a sudden that happened and just stopped.
Yeah, and I think earlier in the same episode, he shut his dad down on some real cold-blooded stuff.
He pretty much called his dad a bitch. You know, he's like, yo, hey, Pops, your son, you're a bitch. You're a straight bitch. Give me a gun. I'm surprised he didn't take the gun from him and pistol whip his dad. That was the only thing missing.
So how many seasons do you guys think Walking Dead has left in it? Because it sounds like it might be approaching the shark. It sounds like some intense stuff that's been going on.
No, it's not even close to Joe. Walking Dead has got as many seasons as it wants right now. So long as they do, they can continue a good storyline and keep having, you know, good actors on there. They can go as long as they want. The only thing they need to do is keep Rick alive, because essentially it's Rick's story. So you can kill, and the comic book goes this way too, you can kill all the characters. You can't kill Rick, because the story is essentially Rick's story. And as long as they keep doing good, I mean, comic book wise, you know, they've got, they're probably around issue, that, you know, following, probably up to around the mid-30s. The comic book is over 100 issues now, 100, you know, it's in the 110s at this point. So you've got stories that they can go on just based on the stuff that's been in the comic book. And remember, they're not following the comic book 100%. You know, Daryl was never in the comic book. Neither was Merle. You know, Dale is still alive in the comic book. You know, Dale is still alive after the prison in the comic book. Andrea is still alive in the comic book. They're in the 110s, you know. Dale and Andrea were supposed to get together. Shane died. They never went to Atlanta. And Shane died in the time period where they would have left to go to Atlanta. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that they've changed to be able to make the, you know, to change the story and give the TV Walking Dead its own life. But it follows the comic book enough that if they continue to follow the, you know, be parallel to the comic book, that they could go another 5, 6, 7 years easy, as long as they keep everything interesting.
Yeah, I can definitely see that, because like you said, you know, this isn't something like Breaking Bad. On the first episode, we knew Walter White had cancer. And
right.
And so we knew, you know, this that there was a finite amount of time that the story was going to be told. But with this, as long as you keep Rick alive, as long as you keep Carl alive, I think, you know, everybody else is an interchangeable piece to keep the story going.
Right. And you could develop Carl enough to the point where Rick doesn't have to, you know, Rick doesn't have to live.
And Carl kills him.
Well, Carl killed him, you know, I'm surprised he hasn't killed him already. His dad's a bitch. It's a crazy bitch sitting there fucking trees. Like, you know, I mean, he sits there and sees the ghost of his wife and starts pulling his pants down and having sex with trees because he thinks that's his wife. Carl, you know, I mean, seriously, if you figure Carl grows into manhood, right? He's 12, 13 years old, so he really needs only to be, you know, to make it another 3 or 4 years where he's 16, 17 years old. And at that point, he's in this kind of a world, he's a man already, but you have to have him be able to have a love interest and to have sex so that he can have a baby and take care of it, you know. But once he's of that age where he can get a partner, he doesn't, it becomes his story at that point, you know.
Yeah, maybe he hooks up with Michonne. He like that brown sugar.
You know what? Who doesn't? I'm the first one to say, who doesn't like... don't even start me up, bro. This ain't that kind of podcast.
that'll be for the bonus episode.
that'll be for the King of Sports After Hours.
Yeah, gotta have that, man.
So one of the things I really like about Torres versus Zombie is the survival tips and like I think. You know, the new shows are great. I really love the interaction between you and John. But if somebody right. wants to get into your show, I think they really owe it to themselves to go back from the very beginning because you did a lot of establishing the zombie world that you were going to talk about and survival tips. And one of the coolest episodes out of those early shows when you were talking about getting your team together.
Right.
And you're like, you know, you don't want a big team. You want a small unit. So, you know, so let's say a zombie apocalypse happened right now and it was you and me and Alfred and Marcus. You know, what would one of the first things we need to do? What would we have to do, Torres?
Find a woman. I mean, that's four guys, bro. It gets lonely.
I'll go first.
The first thing that we'd have to do is we'd have to establish an expertise. Okay, something, we'd have to all learn general knowledge, but we each have to get an expertise. Like, one of us has to become a mechanic. One of us has to become an agricultural person. One of us has to become a doc, a medical guy. One of us has to become a the various things that we're going to need. And then everybody else has to learn enough to get by, because you're going to need that. Like, we can't all be medics and none of us know how to grow food. You know? You can't. We can't all be mechanics and none of us know, you know, how to take care of how to set a bone. So you got to have that variety. And I think if we got together, and I don't know Alfred and I don't know Marcus, and yeah, you and I have a pretty casual relationship, Nate, I think the first thing we'd have to do is establish some kind of expertise. And then from there, work on that. The second thing that we have to do is that we have to be able to not take things personal. A natural leadership will arise, and you have to really be honest with knowing your place. You know, if Nate comes along and he's showing leadership, you know, then I have to back down if you're making the right decisions, you know, and checking your ego. That's going to be what, trust me, that's going to be one of the biggest things that's going to be a problem is people checking their ego.
You hear that, Alfred?
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Alfred had a big ego?
I have no idea. It's been an accusation, but it's held up in court, and I was acquitted. But you sound like you know what you're talking about. You sound like you're talking about this. Like, do you think there's actually going to be a zombie apocalypse one day?
Oh yeah. Make no mistake about it. Now here's the thing, though. Now remember, we're talking. We're talking in 2013 about what a zombie is versus in 1968 when Night of the Living Dead first came out. Everything's a zombie today. You know, you look at 28 days later, those are infected humans. Those are considered zombies. You know, you got zombies that run. You got zombies that, parkour is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Zombies. Yeah, you know that there's zombie movies that feature parkour zombies. What the fuck are you gonna do against a zombie that could jump down from a roof?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
What happened to the old zombies that would walk real slow?
And that's what I say. See, when I talk about zombie, and you know, and I do lectures on zombie survival, and I always call myself survival for the fat guy. Or survival for the rest of us, and because according to everything that's out there, you got to be a Navy SEAL or retired Navy SEAL to survive an apocalypse, you know. And the reality is not against the zombies that we can beat. Now remember, zombies started in 1968 with Night of the Living Dead. Okay, those zombies are slow moving, flesh eating, dumb. Shoot them in the head, and they're gone. Right, can you kill the brain, you kill the ghoul. That's the quote from the movie. They take over the world. Those zombies take over the world. Why do you have to add running? Why do they need to talk? No. So I dismiss that automatically. Because if that happens, then we are dead. You know? Give me the slow moving zombies where I got a fighting chance. But anyway, in 2013, everything's a zombie. So when you start to talk about infected humans as zombies and having zombie-like traits, yeah, that could happen. I interviewed a guy named Matt Moak. He's an author who wrote a book called Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Zombies. He told me how he interviewed the outgoing head of the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, and he asked, could zombies happen? And she laughed at him and said, give me 10 minutes, I could get rid of the entire United States. You don't think I could come up with something to make an infected human?
Wow.
10 minutes. You know? So and you take something like mad cow disease. And here's the thing, in nature, viruses and bacteria mutate all the time, and they jump species all the time. So if you don't think that something like mad cow disease can't mutate with rabies and with the common cold or flu, and then jump into the human species where somebody catches it, sneezes it, and puts it out in the air, and then goes crazy. You don't think that can happen in nature? You see it in the insect world already. You see where you have these zombie ants and these zombie wasps, and you know these insects that essentially get into the brain of another insect and take control of it and use it for whatever it wants to use it. I mean, that happens. That happens in nature right now. So can something like a 28 days later happen? Hell yeah. Oh, she got serious now, didn't it?
Yeah. I have never heard Alfred this quiet, man.
I'm quarantining myself right now, man. I got to save myself.
What are you doing?
I'm in a quarantine unit right now.
Sure quarantine? I thought you said you were twerking. Hold on, Mike.
That's still after I'm quarantined.
Is this working? Is this on? Slow down, Miley. I don't want to see you twerk. Come on. We're on a podcast. People can't see you anyway.
That's how the zombie apocalypse will start, by twerking.
Man, have you seen what is going on with Miley's tongue? Everywhere. I'm sorry to change this, but we started talking about twerking right quick. Every picture, that girl does not know how to stick her tongue out. It's like it falls out. Like her tongue is three sizes too big for her mouth.
Alfred, that's your girl.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. Wait, it caught me in a couple of years though. I don't know.
What happened?
I said it sounds good to me. She needs to develop a little bit. She doesn't have the booty to be twerking.
No, I don't. I mean, don't get me wrong. She's 20. I'd do her. But I'm just saying, she's got like every time I see her tongue sticking out, I think of like a cartoon donkey.
Yeah.
Her tongue's too big for her mouth, so it's hanging out, all just kind of slobbering all over the place.
Yeah. See.
Which,
As I was like, she's interesting, but she did you see when she was on Saturday Night Live the other night?
I thought
no.
I will say she's got a good she can laugh at herself. So
yeah, well she knows she's this incarnation of Marley she's probably in minute 8 or 9 of the 15 minutes for this one, and she's got to be able to laugh at herself because I think. I'll be honest with you. First of all, the girl's got talent. Anybody who says she doesn't have talent is an idiot. Second thing is that if she can laugh at herself right now and can reinvent herself, this is the new Madonna. And people sit there and go, oh, what the fuck do you mean? You know, if you live through it, Nate, I think you're old enough. I don't know about you, Alfred. But if you lived through seeing Madonna before she became the icon, that girl constantly put herself out there.
Yeah.
You know, and she constantly was reinventing herself, and everything was controversial, and everything was just like, what the fuck is she doing? And oh my God, can you believe that she dressed up like a virgin, was humping the floor, and you believe she had saints and Catholic people all around her on stage? And, you know, I mean, she was out there. Now, Miley's doing this generation's version of being outrageous and being stupid. But the girl's got talent, and if she knows that this is working for now, then she'll milk it for a year. And then you know what? She'll go back down, and then she'll come back out, and she's got the talent that's going to carry her so that when she does do that serious song, that ballad, that heartbreaker, people are going to be like, oh, my God, yes, I forgot. You know, she does have a good voice. She can sing. And then that's going to go to number one, and then bam, there's the new Miley Cyrus.
It's funny that you mentioned Madonna and the Catholics because Miley is playing on a similar sensitivity to where she was America's sweetheart as Hannah Montana, Billy Ray Cyrus's country, all-American daughter. Now she's hanging around Mike Wilmer and she's twerking and she's now associated with the hip-hop community. So I think a lot of the outrage are these parents who are saying hip-hop stole America's sweetheart. You know, the worst nightmare. Guess who's coming to dinner?
Dude, I've been that guy in Puerto Rican. Guess who's coming? Me. You know how I'm coming to dinner. So I get that. But the thing is, too, that, you know what? One thing about the hip-hop community is that it's real forgiving. If it likes you, it's real forgiving. And so that I'm... you know, that gives Miley, because she's got talent, that gives Miley, you know, some room to really be out there. And, of course, you know, the African-American community, if you could piss off the white people, they would accept you. You know?
Yeah, that's not going to be a strike against you.
You know what I'm saying? You know, so, yeah, why not, man? Go with it.
Oh man! So
am I cursing too much?
Nah, it's fine. It's fine.
Oh, that means you can edit it out. All right, cool. Now you can tell that I've been away from radio for a minute because if you listen to my podcast, I drop F bombs like this was annoying, bro.
This is cool because I'm like Alfred doesn't know it, but secretly I'm like checking people off of my checklist. In terms, that's the cool thing about having this show that we can just talk to whoever we want to about whatever we want to. And I've already talked to Bobby, Dennis Black, Agent, co-hosted the show 1 week.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yeah. Talk to you. So Chaps is wants to come on the show, and your boy Mr. Wonderful will be on in a few weeks.
You know what? You're talking to two people who are still in the business. God bless them.
Oh man, yeah, Mr. Wonderful. I mean, we joke the kid a lot, but I've actually listened to his show on from New York, and the kid's got skills. The kid's got skills.
Well, yeah, he does. You know what? But you know, he's doing it the right way, and I love that kid. But he's doing it the right way. Is you know, he took his lumps down here, he learned some stuff, and then he goes up there, and he, you know, he can show off what he learned, and you know, he's in an area where he's familiar with the area, so he doesn't even have to pretend to try to change his accent or anything, and they'll accept him, you know, how he is in that sense, and he knows sports. the kid's bright in the area. It's not like if I was trying to host a sports podcast, hence why you have me on and we go right to zombies and you know. You know, so he stuck to his wheelhouse and then he worked on his style down here. He's up there now and God bless him, man. I mean, that, you know, I want nothing but success for him.
Yeah, it's like the business, you know, I mean, you probably know even better than me. The business is such a battlefield full of haters and people that'll try to use you for as much as they can and then, you know, kick you to the curb. But every time I interact with Mr. Wonderful Man, he's just a good kid who wants to learn and wants to do good in the business.
Yeah, and you know what? Every now and then somebody falls through. You gotta hate that you say it like that, but somebody falls through the cracks. It's an honest to God, good guy, and he makes it up, and people like him, and he does nobody wrong, you know. And that's Mr. Wonderful. That's Chaps too. You know, Chaps is fell through the cracks as a good guy, wasn't too tainted by the business, and now he's running 96X. God bless him.
Yeah, Chaps is I told Chaps we'd have him on after the Redskins win, but the way it's going right now, that might be a year from now.
See you next season, Chaps. Did you see the Onion story that's going around on the internet?
No.
How the Redskins finally changed their name, and now they're the DC Redskins. Instead of Washington, get it? Washington, D.C. You know what? Fuck you guys. You know what? They can't all be funny. What do you want from me? If they were all funny, I'd still be on the air.
You are still in the podcast world with Zombies, with you and your boy, John McTell, Johnny Canada.
Yes.
For the people out there that haven't heard before we let you go, brother, let them know a little bit about the show and where they can find it.
Okay, the show, wow, you know what, I've never been on the receiving end of that. plug your shit, son. the show Toys vs. Zombies is all things zombies. It's 50% pop culture, 50% survival, 100% zombies. John Mecto, who's also known as Johnny Canada, and myself, also known as Ronnie Mexico, you know, that's my hat, tipping my hat off to my boy, Vic.
Shout out to Mike.
If he never caught herpes, I wouldn't have a nickname. But anyway, we talk a lot about zombies, and we have a lot of fun. And in it, I play myself, a paranoid guy who believes the Illuminati's out there, and that the zombie apocalypse is going to happen, you know, December 15th. And Mecto's the guy who's grounded in reality. But we talk a lot of fun stuff, a lot of jokes, and then a lot of zombie stuff. And then, you know, people like it. We got a world, we're worldwide, baby. We got fans in Australia and in England and Japan who listen to the show religiously. So you know, I guess we're doing all right. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, maybe being on this show, Alfred's big in the African community. Maybe that'll open you up to some Nigerian fans or some Liberian fans.
Yeah. Let me tell you, one of the reasons that Night of the Living Dead was successful is because one of the marketing plans that they did was to, back in the days of double bills, was to double bill it with blaxploitation movies because the African-American audience loves horror. You know, it's one of their favorite genres. So they figured that they would put it together with the blaxploitation movies of the early 70s and that people would bite on it and would run with it. And sure enough, it's exactly, you know, part of what happened.
I'm telling you,
yeah?
I was going to say, a movie that I'm actually interested in, I don't know if it's actually in production, but I know he's been talking about it for a while, is Michael Jai White from Black Dynamite. He wanted to make a zombie movie.
Really?
Yeah, he wants to make a 70s black zombie movie.
Dude, if he makes it with like the boom mics coming in and the bad cutting, oh my god, bro! I loved Black Dynamite, and if he goes and makes a zombie version of that, I'm all in. I am all in. Oh, real quick, November 22nd. Guess where I'm gonna be? I'm going to be in Uniontown, Pennsylvania. You know what I'm going to be there for? I'm going to be there for the premiere Opening night, baby. Pro wrestlers versus zombies.
What?
Wow.
I am walking the red carpet in Uniontown, PA, and guess who's going to be at the premiere and after party? Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Wow.
Matt Hardy. Who else is going to be there? Hacksaw Jim Duggan. And the movie also has those guys, and it's got Raven, Shane Douglas.
Oh, what about Raven?
What about Raven?
Perfect.
It's I can't wait to see this movie. It's going to be awesome. So I'm going down to the premiere to go check that out.
That's November 22nd in Uniontown?
In Uniontown, PA. And if you want to check out Toys vs. Zombies, you can get on iTunes or Stitcher, or you can go to the Facebook. Excuse me. I don't do the Twitter bullshit. But you can go on.
You dropped out of Twitter.
Yeah, bro. I have too many haters on Twitter.
Tell me about it.
You have no idea. Like for real. Like I think Boz Boneyard is still up on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can.
Yeah, Boz Boneyard. Yeah.
There's a great story on there about Alfredo Torres getting into a beef with some dude on Twitter that you gotta listen to.
Dude, I'll tell you, if I ever meet that guy, I'll stab him in the throat. nothing aggravates me more than somebody who will hide behind a name and then sit there and attack you. and Nate will tell you, Alfred, I've always been Alfredo Torres. It doesn't matter. I'm Ronnie Mexico on Facebook only because I had to get a real job. But I'm Alfredo. Everything I've ever done in entertainment, I've done radio, I've done videos, I've always been Alfredo Torres. Yeah, my face is out there. I don't hide from anybody. So if I sit here and I go, yo, Alfred, you're a bitch, you can sit there and look me up. And you know this Alfredo Torres talking to you. Now, I'm not gonna hide under the name, you know, Lexicon Starship, and then sit there and say, yo, Alfred, you a bitch, and then have a picture of the moon. You know what I'm saying? So you don't know who the hell I am, you don't know what I look like, and I'm going to sit there and make fun of you. Nothing aggravates me more than that. And so that's what this guy was doing, and I essentially called him a bitch and, you know, said, I'm going to fuck your wife and fish your mother and things like that and piss all over your sister. And, you know, if you want to be a man and come face me, you know where I'm at, you know what I look like. And then the guy kept going, you bitch, you big tough guy, you bitch. Dude, look at my picture. I'm not a big tough guy. I'm 5'2", 106 pounds. All right, that's a lie. I'm 5'11", 260. But still.
Now, if you've never seen Torres before, he looks like he would have been a perfect wrestling manager back in the 80s.
Yes.
Like a Puerto Rican Lou Albano.
That's exactly what I would have been. And I've done wrestling commentary for like the NWA Fusion down here, and I dress up essentially like Jesse the Body Ventura, you know. So I've got that kind of a personality. In case you haven't figured it out, so.
Well, we want to. Go ahead.
Okay. Oh well, also just you know, I said all that, but I forgot to tell people you can get if you guys want to hang out with me, you know, talk to me on Facebook. Ronnie Mexico is the name for me personally, and if you want to know about Toys vs. Zombies, go on Facebook, Toys vs. Zombies. We're very interactive. Starting on Sunday, we'll be doing our Walking Dead thread, so
you
can jump
on
in.
What's the Zombie League?
Zombie Fantasy League. Yep, we'll do it. We got to sign those. You got to pay attention, brother. I know you're busy, but you got to get on there. Send your team now. And what we do is, for those of you who don't know, we know that fantasy leagues are the big deal, especially for you sports guys. So the way to bring in zombies and fantasy league sports is we started a zombie fantasy league. And what we do is every week people draw up a draft from characters of The Walking Dead. And then we set you up against two people. So, like, Alfred, you could have three guys, and Nate would have three guys. Mm-hmm. And they're three different guys. And so we set you up head-to-head. So this week, we see whose people kills the most zombies, and that's how you win.
Wow. That sounds amazing.
It's awesome. And then and we do it. Right, and because we have it, like, Rick is a big zombie killer, and so is Daryl. So because we have a draft, if it's like you two guys, like, okay, so you get, you know, Alfred, you get Rick. But then then Nate gets Darryl. And then after that, you start to get, you know, you could get Herschel, who might kill some zombies, but most of the time he won't. And then Nate gets Carl, who might kill some zombies, but most of the time he won't. And then finally you get Carol, who rarely kills zombies. And he gets, you know, the other daughter, whatever the hell her name is, who rarely kills zombies, you know? And then we go and we see what happens with the episode, because nobody knows what's going to happen. You know, it's like a football game. It's like a baseball game. Huh? You know, we haven't put that aspect in, but because you know you're going to get a superstar, a good utility man, and a scrub, you don't really want to trade, because what are you going to do? You're going to trade Rick for Darryl? The minute you trade him, might be the episode that comes up where Rick kills everybody.
Yeah, but I was going to say, maybe I'll read the spoilers and I'll know who's going to kill who, and then I'll take the
But no, there's no spoilers because there isn't. You're not going to, I mean, nobody's going to trade you because any spoilers you get, they're going to get too. Because if anything, they're going to get them on you because these are people who are really into zombies. So they're out there, you know, looking for every little bit that comes out with them, that comes out on the media. Like right now, there's a scene in which Tyrese goes nuts, and so there are people. I want Tyrese, and it's short-sighted. That's one episode, you know. So Tyrese might go nuts, and he might win you that episode, but you're playing him the whole season. What's he gonna do the rest of the season?
Plus, he's black, so he might not last the whole season.
Well, I'm glad you said it. Because you know nobody else could talk about it. But now that you brought it up, ain't that a bitch? I do not. You know what? If my color or darker, because I'm but a pecan tan. Yeah, I'm a pretty bronze man. So you don't want to be my color or darker in the Walking Dead world, because you know you ain't gonna last, and you don't want to get into a position of authority or respect.
I would say T-Dog didn't last too long.
The minute he started speaking and showing wisdom, you got to go. And the other thing you don't want to do is you don't want to show an interest in Carol.
Yeah.
No. You don't. Oh, yeah. You know that the minute you go, damn, she's hot, pull in the head. Zombie biting your throat. Something. Fuck around with that girl. That's a black widow right there.
Man, so, does Carol get points for the people that she gets killed?
No, you know, maybe. Well, here's the thing: if a character kills another character, like here's the points: you get certain points for killing a zombie, and you get certain points for killing a human, and then you get certain points for killing one of the characters, a named character. So if Carol ends up killing somebody, you know, you're not gonna get points for that. But if that person ends up like when what's his name got killed by the governor who was talking to her, the white guy who was the white prisoner.
And then he turned into the zombie.
You're right. He got shot. Why? Because he was talking to her. So that whoever had the governor got points for that. You know, so you know that
I think Carol should get the assist, like Stockton on that one.
We ain't ready to kind of branch out to start adding those kind of rules. We gotta get this system down before we get to the point where we can start throwing designated hitters and you know that kind of shit. But it's fun. People had a great time last season, and we're doing it up again this season. So we'll see what happens.
I think Alfred might start watching The Walking Dead so he can play in the league now.
Sure.
Well, what we're going to do is, you know, because the season's broken into two halves, you know, you can watch it. Go find me. I'll go like Toys for Zombies on Facebook and just watch what happens. And then you can jump in next year in February when it starts back up for the second half.
All right, again, that is Torres versus Zombies on Facebook. You can check them out on iTunes and Stitcher and all the usual places. It's a great show, and if you enjoyed our chat with Brother Torres, I know you'll like his show. especially like I'm a casual zombie fan and I love his show. So if you're a hardcore, like you watch every episode of The Walking Dead 3 or 4 times and you break down the clues and everything, I know you'll love his show as well. So we appreciate you spending some time with us, brother, and maybe next time you come on, Marcus will be around.
Well, you know what? I thank you guys for having me. I had a lot of fun, and I was scared too because I was like actually reading up on sports. I was like reading shit on soccer and Australian rules football, so I didn't come in sounded like a dumbass. You know? But I really had fun. Anytime you guys want to have me back, I'd be more than happy to, because you guys are a lot of fun. But brother Nate, you know how I feel about you. There's a reason that that your brother Nate.
You know, it's us two men with mutual respect and love and admiration for each other, if you will.
If you understand. And now I think I might have to call Brother Alfred. I might have to move him up into that area, you understand.
Yeah.
Way to fuck that one up there. Way to Caucasianize that there, Alfred.
Like, I like that.
Yes.
I approve of that statement.
Yes.
Oh man, well, that is the great, the one and only Silver Fox, Alfredo Torres. Again, Torres versus Zombies. Check out his show. You can also check him out on Facebook again at Torres versus Zombies. And if you're in Uniontown, Pennsylvania on the 22nd of November, go holler at your boy.
Holler at your boy. I'll be there. Trust me, you ain't going to miss me. I'm that damn sexy.
Alright, so that's Alfredo Torres. We are the Kings of Sport, and we'll be back right after these messages. Well, there it is, people. The interview with the one and only Silver Fox, Alfredo Torres, host of Torres vs. Zombies. What was your favorite part, Big Nasty?
Well, I had a great time interviewing Alfredo Torres, and I just feel like if I had a crazy uncle and he happened to be Puerto Rican, it would be Alfredo Torres. I wouldn't have it any other way. I really liked his insight on Dusty Rhodes, and it's always fun to talk to fans of the territory era who are alive back then, because I always say I really wish I could have at least gotten a sneak peek and been alive for moments of when wrestling was in the territory era, because it was great.
Yeah, Torres is a very good person to chat old school wrestling with, you know, the Dusty Rhodes, Captain Lou Albano's, if you will, those old school cats. That's right in Torres's wheelhouse. So, you know, if you enjoyed the interview and you want to hear more from Brother Torres, check out Torres versus Zombies. You can find it on Facebook as well as iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever good podcasts are found. So, that's going to do it for this week. We hope you enjoyed the bonus interview with Alfredo Torres, and, be sure to check thekingsofsport.com for all of your Kings of Sport needs. We've got a new show up this week that we recorded on Monday as well. We got some really great interviews. I think the Hollywood Simpson interview's up there still. The interview that we did, it's still there, boo. The interview that Alfred and I did with Mark Kreskel, talking about the WWE and bullying. The interview that we did way back with Kevin Krieger is still up there. So we've got some great interviews, great topics. KingsofSport.com, Stitcher, iTunes. Check us out. Like us, rate us, review us. And while you're there, share us with your friends. And, of course, the Facebook page, Facebook.com/TheKingsofSport. And if you want to leave us any feedback, hit us up on Twitter, KOS_POD. So I think that's it for this week, Big Man. So I got to go out and get my trick or treat on.
You do that. Be safe, Nate, and remember to look both ways before you cross the street.
Oh, I wasn't crossing the street, so I was just. Yeah, we're not gonna get into how I trick or treat. So
we'll save that for off the air.
Yeah, we'll say that for the Kings of Sport After Dark.
Yeah.
So for Big Nasty, for Brother Torres, and for myself, and wherever you are, Marcus Vandenberg. That's it. We'll see you guys next week with a brand new edition of the Kings of Sport.